Hi, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We're starting a little earlier because Matt's dad has got to go to work and wants to take him to task on a few things. Larry there. Just a reminder, you'll see the little things about SACPA, which includes an opportunity to become a member. And we get over this, do this quite a lot. If you're a student, it's $5. They always get a good break on these things. And if you're a regular person, it's $25. But well worth it. And I say this because we really need the money. And but it's worth... We should probably have a muggle category there. Thanks for that suggestion. And if you're a corporation, which some of you may be, it's $50 because, you know, if you can afford to be a corporation, you can afford $50. Anyway, so just a reminder that, of course, the question time, you can always have a preamble to your question, but try not to make it a sermon, you know, otherwise I have to sort of intervene. And, of course, the question then will be addressed by either or both of our presenters. So, without further ado, I think I get out of here, and Matt and Terry will come up and take your questions. Now, we don't have the process at the back there, so you'll have to come and be looked at by everyone up here. So please do that. Okay?
Good afternoon. My name is Larry Conley, and yeah, I'm Matt's father. But I guess the question that I have for the both of you this morning, you've talked about Harry Potter and the seven volumes and the good and evil theme. I guess, Matt, this is something directed towards you. Talking about good and evil, what about what happened at LCI this morning in terms of that situation that developed over the last week?
Well, actually, just to remind on that, I'm actually pretty fortunate to be here today because LCI last week received a note in the bathroom that said that on this day of December the 20th, five people were to be killed and in the school, and then the suicide was going to occur. And so that kind of threw the school into a bit of a panic, because the school obviously took it very seriously, and they shut down doors, and they had us take precautions. They increased police presence in the school. But what it did is that it got people really stressed, because in addition to the stresses of the holidays and final exams coming up and just everyone looking forward to the break, now you have this stress of knowing if you were going to come to school on the 20th. And it just kind of escalated because, of course, the rumor mill began to work, and there's all kinds of crazy things. Some people were saying that every school in the city was going to shut down except for LCI. Some people were saying that that there was a second note. Some others said just that and then, of course, it kind of threw people into panics because of different opinions on the subject. Some people felt that they were genuinely afraid and didn't want to come to school. Some thought that, hey, this is a great way to take the week off because, you know, it could happen any day this week. So that's what a lot of people did. And then there's just some that, like myself, that felt that, you know, we had to support our teachers and that, you know, you can't be pushed around by this kind of stuff because it was just a note. And, you know, you can't stop living life. And so today... there was a small number of kids that went to school. I was one of them. My bus, there was about four kids. My English class today consisted of eight. My history class consisted of six. And these are typically classes that have maybe 30, 20 kids in the class. But it was a pretty good day today, actually, because how it started off is that they limited the school to two entrances. And they had all the teachers stand at each of the entrances there and welcome the students. They thanked everyone. They had candy. They were passing out candy and saying thank you for coming today. And it was really quite nice because in the classrooms they kind of made it more of an intimate setting. And so you got to have kind of that one-on-one time with your teacher. And it gave you something to think about. But and like I said, I felt that it was important though to support the teachers because I mean it's important that I guess it's great for the students to say that. that they could not come to school and make that decision. But, I mean, what about the teachers that had to be there that day, you know, regardless of whether or not they were scared? And they have their responsibility to their students, and why shouldn't the students have that same responsibility to their teachers? And so, no, that was a pretty scary thing, and I was afraid that they were going to lock down the school and then I wouldn't be able to be here today. But fortunately, all went well. It's about 1 o'clock right now, so things are still good, and so hopefully it continues for the rest of the day. But as far as good and evil goes, it's definitely a reflection on the good and evil in the world. And that, you know, it just takes one note, one person thinking that it's funny to do that, which it isn't.
And
the theme of darkness as well, that, you know, you're just uncertain. You don't know what to do. And that's what happened to a lot of our students, is people just didn't know what to do in a lot of cases. And, you know, decisions were made, and so far things have been good. So, like I said, thank you for having me today. I'm happy to be here, and it definitely gives you a lot to think about. Thank you.
I hope I get, it's Albert Coy, hope I get the name of this giant correctly. Haggard it was?
Haggard.
Oh, Haggard.
Yep.
Haggard. I'm 6'6", and I wonder if I could be haggard if I would let my hair grow and mess it up. I wonder if that's our problem here. We should mess up our hair a little more so we'd be accepted. I just wonder. That's maybe a question there. Another thing, calling it I'll call it a myth, methodical book, if I may say that way.
Absolutely.
But calling it a gospel, I have concerns with that. Could you, is that going a little too far? Thank you.
I don't think it's a gospel story. That was a partly facetious title, but there certainly are some very strong positive themes for young people in the book, and I appreciate the Pope's quotation from Matthew that indicates his encouragement of it. I think it's good reading material and a lot of positive stuff. Harry Potter would have dealt with the threat at the school in the same way that you chose to. You know, you can't be defeated by this stuff, and that theme is very strong in all the Potter books. You don't back up and you don't disappear. You tackle stuff and you make good happen out of evil. So.
Could you be Hagrid? Could you be Hagrid? Yep, you could be Hagrid if you wanted to. Absolutely.
Is that our problem? Maybe us older people, we mess up our hair a little more and let it grow
longer. Oh, not at all. But I personally admire those of the other generations, because there's definitely something for the youth to learn. And so I definitely respect their opinion. But as far as the gospel goes, how I've heard it described in a way as well is that we're not saying that Harry is a Christ figure, but gospel, I believe, is good news, if I'm correct,
in Greek.
And there's definitely some good news in Harry Potter. It definitely speaks to our generation, and it definitely shows. So in that way, I guess you could say that it's considered a gospel. But we're in no way saying that Harry's a Christ figure or this should be added to the Bible or anything of that type. Thank you.
Anyway. I'm Howard Forsyth. I have the advantage of never having read one of your books or gone to the shows, and also I was late for the talk. I got here after it was over. I talked to the people at the table. I said, what does it tell us we're useful? The two great problems facing civilization is how we've devastated the environment and how we have done almost nothing about major wars. Now, what you talk about good and evil, we've been hearing that from Christianity and Judaism for 2,000 years. It doesn't do a heck of a lot of good. Does it tell us how to avoid the next great war, Russia and China on one side and the United States on the other?
No.
Big questions. Is it important enough? Should I go see some of it, or should I read some of the books? I don't think so. I'm interested in those two big problems.
Howard, you may be, but I think the constituency that Rowling writes to is not. And that's what struck me powerful about the book. She wrote about things that 10 to 16-year-olds in particular wanted to deal with, and I was just awed reading the material and then reflecting about it, how for them that's not the issue. The issue is darkness and light, and is there hope in this place? or is Voldemort going to take over the world? However we define that. So there are different generational themes, and the politics of our world is not on the front burner, I think, of our youth. That'd be my take on the book. That doesn't mean, Howard, that isn't a good theme to be asking about. It just isn't on the front burner of our generation.
Bob Anderson. At our table, I think it was Bob Bainborough raised the idea of heroes and heroism. Obviously, the book has such an attraction for young people. Harry must be a hero in terms of wearing T-shirts and all the other stuff that goes with it. Do you want to comment on the heroes of youth there and otherwise?
Bob, I just want to make sure I get this right. So you're asking to comment on what makes a hero for youth, or what?
Well, is Harry a hero?
Is there, okay?
For youth?
Okay, sure. Yes, I would say that Harry is a bit of a hero for youth in the way that, that like I said, he kind of exemplifies what every young person would like to be. I mean, he's, like I said, he has the friends, he has kind of the personal appeal, but he's very human. Because, you know, in some of the books, he kind of toils a bit with ambition, that he has problems just kind of keeping himself down to reality sometimes, and his friends definitely come in handy there by kind of knocking him aside a bit and saying, you know, you're still human, you know, you're not, and you're only 16 or 15 at the time, you know, you're not this divine character. But I think in many ways that Harry, yes, can be perceived as a hero for the youth, because he definitely exemplifies the qualities of never giving up and always showing courage in the face of danger, and I think that's something that the youth need to see. And like I said, kind of touching once again on Harry, J.K. Rowling covers a lot of the war themes, and I think in a lot of ways that's key to cover on as well, because this generation doesn't really identify with that. And in many ways, this is kind of the problem that we have in our history classes, is that we learn about World War II or Vietnam and that type of thing, and a lot of kids say, well, I'm not going to get into politics. Why is this important? And it's very important, because it's important to remember what happened, and, you know, lest we forget. And it's definitely a comment there, and to the youth to take note of that, and to remember the sacrifices that were made and how to handle that. And so, yes, I would say that Harry, in many senses, is a hero and can be conceived as a role model for youth, just to exemplify some of those key values that aren't maybe as present as in some of the other figures that we have in society. I mean, not to knock on some of the celebrities, but I mean, you can kind of see that Lindsay Lohan or Britney Spears may not be the ideal role models for the youth. And so, yes, I would say that you can learn a lot from Harry and his friends for the youth and on the values that you should have.
As you come to the front, I'll just comment. I don't want to. If you haven't read the final volume, I don't want to take away your suspense. But one of the questions in the book was whether Harry would die or not in that book, and I'll leave that for you to figure out. But the point is made in the final volume that you have to at least be prepared to die when you're doing good. And I thought it was a very interesting theme that part of heroism in each generation. You have to be prepared to die.
My name is Rena Wass. Thanks both of you for an awesome presentation. I've been interested in why people are so, I don't know, it's like they're enamored with this idea of magic. And one of the things that we were talking about was, and what I've really identified is, these books are enormously important and popular. And I think it's because kids, what I'm seeing is, they want to be empowered. They want to make a difference. They're living vicariously through these heroes and heroines. And unfortunately, we're giving them magical tools. What if we gave them real tools to feel like they're, you know, this important? I think we've got a great opportunity. I'd like your comments. Thanks.
Well, first of all, I completely agree with you on that one. You know, oftentimes you hear a lot of politicians and a lot of leaders talk, when they talk to the youth, they say, you know, the youth is our future, and we need to invest in the future. Well, I would disagree with that. I would say the youth is the present, and tomorrow never comes, so get started today. And so that's what I would say to that. But yes, I would agree, though, because Harry does have this kind of whole tool of magic. And one of the important things to remember, too, is the books have come under criticism for having with maybe encouraging kids to join the occult or to pursue magic as a lifestyle. And that's not the function of Harry Potter at all. What Harry Potter uses the magic for is he uses it as a vehicle, almost to enable the story. You'll find that if you read in Harry Potter, there, you'll find that the magic isn't related to any type of worship or any type of anything spiritual like that. It's very functional. They use it for transportation. They use it for extended communication. They use it for self-defense. Exactly. In many ways, the magic is almost a symbol for what we use technology for today. I mean, we certainly don't use it in any spiritual sense. We use it for functionality. So we can have that image there or driving our cars, etc. But yes, I would agree, though, that it's important to give the youth the tools to be empowered. And yes, Harry Potter definitely calls youth to that, to feel empowered and to make a difference. And like Terry said, especially in the seventh book, you definitely find that difference. But no, I completely agree with you that it would be great to see the youth get more involved in the system and get involved in their lives and the process. And yes, I think that's a bit of an issue, and I think Harry Potter can be contributing, though, to the reverse of that trend, and so you can start seeing the youth get more involved and start taking a lot of these issues that are important to the world a bit more to heart.
I'm Kathy Coates, and a huge Harry Potter fan, as some of you know. A couple of comments I wanted to make, and then you can ask you to comment on the comments. The first is that J.K. Rowling uses incredible grammar and sentence structure and language and vocab, and it's so nice to see kids reading books that aren't being dumbed down to their level. So, and I know teachers, you know, appreciate the fact that the language in the book is really encouraging kids to use proper grammar. Now, I better not make a grammatical mistake as I do this commenting. that's one thing. The other theme that you sort of touched on but not quite, and maybe you'd like to elaborate on, is that everyone, when they're having these battles against evil, many people bring what we might consider small, little gifts to the battle, but they're the ones that are important. So I'm thinking of, what's the name of the fellow, the fatter fellow that...
No.
Neville. Yes, exactly. Thank you. You know, Neville is not courageous, and he has to really pump himself up to jump in, but when the chips are down, he does it. And so there's this real sense that, for me anyways, that it's not just this huge, big, you know, you have to be the superhero to accomplish something. It's not just the Superman. It's the 15 people that do some small little piece, which I think is an important lesson for today. And the last one is that... there is death throughout the books, and again, I think it's really, I don't want to say refreshing, that's not quite the right word, but kids face death, they just don't always think that it's going to touch them. And so we could certainly have a very nice, you know, she could have written a series of books with lovely, you know, everything being happy and Hollywood endings, but she was very clear that kids need to know about death.
Well, I think those are all good comments and don't need a lot of elaboration, but I was thinking as you're talking about small gifts being appreciated in so many of the school battles, it's so terribly important that the kids line up with Harry and they have a choice as to who they'll support in these battles and Neville and others who add to the forces of good in some of the school turmoil and so on is very critical. And it does remind you that... ordinary, normal people have the ability to change and need to make those choices. And always, in each book, I think, kids have to make some choice about who they're going to support and whether they're going to stand with good or evil and bullying or not. And so it is really helpful. Trevor thinks you shouldn't use the word vocab. but anyway, I do appreciate that the language is good English. Yeah.
I'm Trevor Page, and I've read three of the Harry Potter books and seen all the movies. And I went to a school like Hogwarts, or rather like Hogwarts. It didn't have the fairy tale towers at the top, but the regime was quite similar. I think one of the themes that you identified, the struggle between good and evil, is very important. And that certainly predates World War II, as one of the questioners already pointed out. But my question is directed to Terry. And we've heard quotations from the current Pope and one of his exorcists. But I wonder if he would like to... I wonder if he would care to draw parallels between some of the characters in Harry Potter and his own profession. We've heard a couple of references to Harry Potter not being like a Christ-like character. But I wonder whether you think there are any parallels, because we do have a phenomena, as you've both described. We have had walking on water in at least some of the movies. And if you care not to draw parallels, I'm not pressing the point, but if you feel there are, I'd be interested in those parallels. Thank you.
Interesting question, and I wouldn't have worded it quite the way Matthew did earlier when he was saying that Harry isn't a Christ figure, because I think, without wanting to be too fine about it, there are some similarities, and I was particularly reminded of that in the last novel when the issue of dying for the cause comes up, and it becomes clear that if you are faithful, you need to be at least prepared to die for truth. And so I think there are some similarities there around the Christ figures, and there certainly are parallels around gospel themes of forgiveness and grace and second chances and those kind of things. They aren't exclusive to the gospel, but I don't know if I'm answering your question.
You're skirting it.
Okay, well, we're not on television, so sharpen the question.
Draw parallels between the characters in Harry Potter and your own profession.
Clergy. Well, I think don't...
Not necessarily clergy, but in the whole belief system.
Do you want to help me, Matthew?
Mysticism.
Oh, well, you and I have talked about mysticism. I don't understand the use of the word mysticism, Trevor, because for me it's vertical worship, sort of, as opposed to communal stuff. Mysticism is a more personal style of worship and faithfulness, and I don't see that word being well used in stuff with Harry Potter, because as Matthew says, the magic is not around worship; it's around functionality, and it's a technology sort of. It's the technology of the book. There are values, and there are images of faith that I see in there, because I come at it with that vocabulary. And there are clergy figures in the book, like Dumbledore is most certainly, I think, a priest or a spiritual mentor and guide. And some of the other teachers have that, and there are some like Snipes, who we spent 7 books trying to figure out who he is, and and I won't tell you whether he's good or evil, but...
Well,
that is certainly a satanic image for me. Yeah, very similar parallels to Satan. And what interests me is that in this modern age, where we're beyond believing in most of us are beyond believing in devils that kind of lurk under tables and so on. The generation that buys these books obviously is entranced and spoken to by evil that is that powerful and that awesome. And that where you have to make a choice between good and evil, and Voldemort can be very convincing, and evil can be very convincing. And I see in that certainly themes of life. And I think it tells me that our whole generation of youth and young adults indeed have this struggle trying to figure out which is good, which is evil, and which is counterfeit, and which is real. And they just live that issue probably every day. So it's very thoughtful. It helps me to, it would help grandparents and parents to relate to kids knowing that they have this confusion. The confusion is in the book, and it clearly rings a bell for kids.
The other thing, too, I'd just like to qualify as well, when I said that Harry is not a Christ figure, that's not to say that there's no biblical themes or visuals within the book. Just to name a few off the top of my head here, Terry showed the picture of the sorting hat there, and how it's that whole theme about being chosen in the different houses. When Harry actually puts on the hat, he's received kind of prior knowledge before that there's a house called Slytherin, and relating to the snake, and he's told that there's not a witch or wizard that went bad that didn't come out of Slytherin. So if you're in Slytherin, there's a pretty chance that you're not going to do very good in the world. And so he puts on the hat, and so he's sitting there saying, "Not Slytherin, not Slytherin." And the hat says to him, "Well, it's not Slytherin. Well, you know, you could be great. You can have anything you want if you go to Slytherin." And so he says, no, not Slytherin, not Slytherin. So he says, fine, then you go to Gryffindor, which is the house that Harry Potter ends up, and the house represented by bravery. And so I guess you can draw that one as a comparison to the temptation of Christ, where Christ is offered the kingdoms of the world, and he refuses. Another one is in the case, I guess, with the brick wall. Harry Potter is told that there's a solid brick wall. It's very thick and solid bricks, and he's told to walk through it. And so he kind of looks at it, and he's thinking, you know, there's no way that this could work. But instead, he makes a run at it and goes through the brick wall, and hey, it actually turns out. So it's kind of a reflection on kind of the leap of faith, and that how it's important to have faith and keep hold of it despite all. And so obviously there are biblical parallels with the story of Harry Potter, but I mean, you could go as far as any story with that. But no, I would still hold firm though that even though there are Christ-like moments in the book, it's certainly not a parallel of any of great proportions to the Bible. Thank you.
Austin Fennell. I want to tell you a story about the production of the Harry Potter books. Our second son, Andrew, is a manager of the production of books in Altona for Friesens. And the story is true that when that company was given the contract for printing 500,000 books in Canada, it's true that they hired guard dogs so that there wouldn't be any theft of the books from the publishing company until the actual date in which they were released. Evil is generated by Harry Potter books. And I'd like to, and Trevor has stimulated some very interesting suggestions. And I can see some conversations coming up. That's good. But I wonder if, since there's a thesis in the book, it seems to me, and I have to confess, I really haven't read them, just bits and pieces. But the movies, I'm surely must have got some of the truth of the stories related.
We disagree with you, we'll say something.
Yeah, right, I'm sure you will. If there is a notion and a predominant idea in the book that human beings have an immense capacity to take charge of their own lives and do what they want, which I've heard as the message at one high school graduation after another, I can't tell you how many of I've heard, you can do whatever you want. And I keep saying, that's what you had to get rid of in my day when you thought you could be Superman or you could be the Lone Ranger. Well, part of the maturation was to discover a world in which you couldn't do that. If the magical is really trying to, and here's a question to you, is the magical in some way or saying is that the realities of evil can't be dealt with without some kind of supernatural participation? I want to know whether you would draw any parallel in that regard.
Well, I'll answer that, but my thought, my reaction is more to sort of the middle section of your question. No, I don't think. I believe that people get excited about the magic in the stories, but I believe it's just background to the struggle between good and evil and darkness and light. And And I don't think the message is you have to have wizard powers before you can do good, but you have to be brave and honest, and you have to care about and respect people, and you have to stand on your ground and have courage about it. Those are the kind of the fundamental messages I get out of that. But what I was thinking back to, Austin, was when you and I grew up in the 40s and 50s and so on, we were intoxicated by technology and the fact that the world was going to get better and better, and medicine would make things right, and disease would go away, and we'd conquer space. And so we were inclined to think we were super people. And this generation comes to these stories from exactly the opposite perspective. There's a feeling of we're defeated, evil is out of control, we can't manage anything, the world, Voldemort has all the power. And this book, these stories tend to imply, I think, to our children and grandchildren, there is good you can do, and there is light as well as darkness. Because I think this generation is overwhelmed by the darkness oftentimes, I think. I don't know if I've dealt with your question.
I'd actually like to qualify. Yeah. Also, I would agree with you, too, that oftentimes you hear of the valedictorian going up and trying to empower the youth and get them all pumped up, saying that you can do anything. And really, it's an important thing to do. I mean, you wouldn't have a valedictorian go up and say, well, you can't do anything. But at the same time, though, I would agree, and it was interesting because we recently had an EP conference at LCI where we invited different members of the community to come and speak on different professions and different opportunities for youth. But we had a keynote speaker. And the address that the keynote speaker delivered talked about how this generation is going to mean nothing. That in 15 years we'll have a computer that will surpass the capabilities of the human mind by 50 times, and you'll be able to pick it up for $2,000. This generation, really in the long term, won't mean a thing. I mean, in many cases, I would agree that the youth of today do have a sense of entitlement, where we think that we are the be-all to end-all, and really that isn't the case, because computers are just going to get that much faster, countries are going to get that much bigger, and in fact, they were talking about how the internet said a lot of the chat rooms, that if some of these chat rooms were countries, they would have a bigger population than real countries. And I think Facebook would be the 11th biggest country in the world right now. And if it was a country. And so the thing is that, no, I would agree that there does need to be a bit of a trip to reality occasionally. But, I mean, of course, you would not pump up the youth to feel that they could be empowered. But, no, I would agree with Terry that there is too much of this kind of diffuse culture, and that's why you have voter apathy. That's why you have people that don't want to get involved in the system. Because I talk to my friends all the time, and I say, "Hey, why don't you support this political party, or why don't you get out and vote?" Right? And they all say, "Well, they're all corrupt." You know, I look at Jack Layton, Stephen Harper, and Stephan Dion. Oh, they don't do it for me. They're not going to do anything. They're all lying to you. Well, but at the end of the day, you got to pick one. You know, you have to. One of those guys is going to have a say over what's going to happen to your life and where your taxes are going to go. And so you may as well just pick one. Because it's that important. And so, like I said, I would agree that there does need to be a trip to reality once in a while, but at the same time, I would also agree that this generation does need a little bit of that sense of empowerment that yes, you can achieve what it is that you set out to achieve. So, thank you.
Oh, sorry, Terry.
Okay, Matthew...
I was going to take one other question, but I think we've time anyway.
Well, Matthew wants to answer a question that nobody's asked, so... but maybe we'll... maybe we'll let this fellow come first, and then I'll ask the question that he really wants asked.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen a man pull off this
yep.
thing.
Yep, can I give you a hand?
Very... I like that. Thanks, Terry. My name is Jack Dick. And my thought and my take on what I've heard, I've never seen the show or read the books, but just from listening to what these gentlemen have said, and done it very well, because my take is that the author is like God, Harry is like Jesus, the books are like those in the Bible with different names. Do you see this as a takeoff of the Bible, and can it be used as a vehicle to direct youth to look at the real life stories and answers. And I'd like to accentuate that answers to all their problems in the world as well as their individuals. And look between the front and the back of the Bible and read it through and again and again, and maybe they'll come up with the answers and they'll have no more.
Well, I wouldn't quite call Harry Potter the Bible. I think that there's a lot of morals and values that are important, that should be important to these youth that are there, but it doesn't quite compare to the good book. But on the other hand, though, Harry Potter could almost become that vehicle that would lead people to pursue more about their faith and more about what they believe. As you can see, all seven of those books are fairly large in proportion. And before Harry Potter came out, there was a need to get the youth involved and in wanting to read. And, you know, for a kid to pick up a book that size and to be able to read it all the way through and to be able to read the whole series, it's a pretty big accomplishment. And so I think that in many ways it would kind of empower the youth to be able to pick up a big book like that and to be able to read it. And so, yes, if they can certainly read Harry Potter, then I don't see why not. Well, why they wouldn't be drawn to read the Bible. That obviously the Harry Potter could get you thinking along the right track and maybe to pursue the Bible. But the other thing about Harry Potter, too, that something that we kind of get a question on that I've asked before is that, is Harry Potter going to be a classic? And you can't really comment on what's going to happen down the road. But here's what I do know. That if you look at the trends of what becomes a classic, there was once a man in Great Britain that had great expectations thrust upon him. This is a tale of one city, and he was in debt in the holiday time, so he wrote a Christmas classic that is a mainstay in today's culture, and his name is? And he wrote the Christmas Carol, that's right. And oftentimes, classics almost kind of come out of nowhere. They kind of surprise you. And that's what happened with Dickens, is that he had a huge debt that he needed to pay, and his publisher said, give me something for Christmas. So he wrote the Christmas Carol, and there you have it. It's certainly paid off his debts, and things were good. And if you look at many classic movies, the best picture of 1972 was The Godfather, and that starred a unknown Al Pacino. It had an unknown director in Francis Ford Coppola, and it had a struggling Marlon Brando that needed to pay off some debts to the movie company. And in the end, it became a famous movie that defined the 70s. And then can anyone name the most expensive picture in 1980, in the 1980s that was made? Can anyone name it? No, it was actually a film by the title of Baron von Munchausen. And it starred the heavyweight cast with Uma Thurman and Robin Williams. And the film was actually budgeted for $23 million, and it ended up costing $46 million to make. And in the end, in ticket sales, the film company received $8 million, so it actually lost money in its big production. It was supposed to be this great big production that was going to defy box office success and be this great production. And so, once again, getting back to Harry Potter, is it a classic? Obviously, you can't comment on what would be considered timeless literature for the future, but if you were to draw a trend between what eventually becomes a classic, Harry Potter's well on its way. It definitely surprised a generation. Nobody actually saw it coming out of anywhere. J.K. Rowling, to publish the first book, had to go with an unknown publisher, and since then, they're not unknown anymore. They're certainly a lot more established now, and you could make a pretty good argument that Harry Potter's well on its way. You can't say for sure, but it could definitely survive the test of time.
So, did you want to respond in some way? Yeah. Well, we'll just respond from there, Howard, because we're not on live, unless...
I have no objection to things that teach children to grow up, because I have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren come. I have no problem with that. But none of that, and indeed not much of what really mature adults are doing, tells us very much about how really to avoid the climate wiping out most life on the earth, and atomic bombs, when the next when World War III, they tell us how to act with honesty and courage, as you said earlier, but it doesn't give us the kind of vision we need to deal with the two great issues facing civilization. Right?
Thanks, Howard.
Can I just comment? Sure. I agree with you, and that just means to me that this is not to be worshipped. There's things missing in this book. I don't hold the attitude to politics that's reflected in the book, for example. So it's, in the end, just reading material. I won't worship it yet.
I should have said one more thing. Christianity has not solved the problem of World War III. So the Bible and the Jews haven't solved it. They're struggling with it. We have to go beyond anything we have so far. We have to find new vision of an amazing sort to deal with these two great challenges to civilization.
Thank you very much, Howard. Now, as moderator now, I've got to get you guys out of here. The one question I have that has come up a few times is, why are young people want to get out of real life and become into the Harry Potter world? I think that's a really important question for us to consider, why it is that they go into to the taking of drugs and various other things like fantasy games and so on. Is it the way of getting empowered? And why do they need to make that shift? Why can't it be there for them in the kind of real world? But anyway, I didn't have a chance to ask that question because you guys did your job, and I would like to thank very, very much our two speakers, Terry Shillington and excuse me, Matt Connolly, and they've been terrific. Thanks very much. So that's us to January 10th, okay? And that's when we'll probably see you all again.
Merry Christmas. Thank you. Thank you. That was really fun. I know,
it's
good.
Yeah, it's great. The questions were super.
I would agree.
Yeah, they are going to do that. That's all they put on tape.
Well, we'll see how it works.